In this part of Focus, we welcome back Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, has written for some of the other major national audio-video publications, and occasionally is here on this show to talk about what's new in this area. And generally, we always get questions because there seems always to be something new. And as a consumer, if you're going out there and you're wanting to buy a television or a DVD player or a CD player or what have you, the choices can be very confusing. And sometimes you look at a thing and you think, well, should I do this now? Should I wait a week? Should I wait a year? Because things do change all the time. And we try to help you keep up with what's new by inviting Rich to be here on the show. And we're pleased that he's here once again. And if you have questions you want to call in, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you've got questions, you can call us. Well, welcome back.
You gave me a tough act to follow this time. Usually I follow Sandy Mason or some fellow talking about Bosnia. But I do want to make clear that before the sexual revolution, there were no personal computer viruses.
You got to be careful because, you know, you connect with another computer. You're connecting with every computer that computer has ever connected with.
That's right. So you've got to be careful.
All right.
I guess the big news, if it's news, is that MP3, which, of course, has been the news quite a bit lately, is that that's the compression scheme that allows you to take large music files and make them very small so you can get a lot of them on a disk or a memory chip. In other words, whereas a regular CD only holds 74 minutes of sound or 80 if you're recording your own, you can get about 10 hours of sound on a single CD using MP3. And now the automakers and the companies that supply car stereos, such as Panasonic and Blaupunkt and some of the others, are including MP3 decoding in their players. And a few home players are now trickling out that will play regular CDs and MP3 encoded CDs. Now, you can imagine an MP3 jukebox, if you have a 10-disc changer at 10 hours per disc, you can have 100 hours of music in one CD changer, which is pretty impressive, going from 10 hours or so of music or 12 hours of music to 100 hours. Mm-hmm. And there are more compression schemes coming down the pike, such as the Microsoft Windows Media and MP3 Pro, which is designed by Thompson, the parent of RCA, which even increase that further. You can even double that amount of time with some of these schemes. You can get 20 hours of music on a single CD. Now, of course, there is a compromise. The sound quality is not as good as a regular CD. But, for example, when you're driving in a car, who cares? The background noise is high enough to mask any deficiencies in the medium, which is why, you know, cassettes were survivors in cars, because who cared if those tape hiss? You couldn't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having Dolby on your car cassette didn't really make a big difference because the road noise was up there at 60-some-odd decibels, so that it masked the noise on the cassette. So I think MP3 will be the ideal medium for cars, whether it's players that accept the memory chips themselves, whether it's a compact flash or memory stick that Sony makes, or whether it's going to be CDs. This is the way to go, because I don't think you're going to see many car players, for example, that play DVD audio, for example, or SACD, these improved CDs with higher fidelity. Why bother unless you're sitting still in the garage? Because even in a Lexus or a Mercedes, there's still enough road noise to mask the subtleties of the music and cover up the tape hiss, or whatever hiss there might be. You know, there's no tape hiss on CDs unless they were old masters. But so MP3 is really coming into the mainstream now. See, up till now, MP3 has been mainly a hobbyist medium and college students and people who really like messing around with their music, downloading from the web, etc. But I think you may even start seeing commercial CDs perhaps maybe released in MP3. You'll pay more for it for all the extra music. The royalties don't change. So, but for example, you could have 10 albums on a single disc. Now, whether you want that, now, if you're a Wagner fan, maybe that's appropriate. You have three operas on a single disc, you know. So there are some options there. And I think we're going to start seeing more of this than we're going to see DVD audio or SACD, is my estimation. One other thing I wanted to mention, I've mentioned in my column in the Gazette recently or more than once, there's a little bit of sleight of hand going on with these new high-definition TVs that are coming out. You've noticed the prices have come down. There's several companies are advertising $2,000 HD TVs, but they're not true HD TVs. They will display a high-definition picture, but they don't have a high-definition digital tuner. You have to buy the tuner extra, and that can cost from $500 to $1,500 extra above the price of the TV. and the extra wiring and cabling, etc. And so it's a little bit deceptive when you go in the store and see this big banner, HDTV, and it's showing you a great picture because it's coming from a special videotape the store has, which you can't buy at home since there are no HD videotape players, and at the moment, no HD DVD players. The only way to get high-definition picture is either off the air or by satellite, and in this market, there aren't even any off the air at this point. So it's mainly by either Dish Network or DirecTV. But there is a kind of interesting thing that they are not telling you the entire truth, that these HDTVs are not complete televisions. And I'm a little bit distressed by this. I guess they're trying to get them into the marketplace, and they're going to sell you the decoder afterwards, but you're going to have yet one more box to put on your TV. Hmm. So, of course, if they change the system, then maybe that's an advantage because then you can buy the updated box down the road. But I still think that it's kind of bugs me that they are not really telling you the whole truth until you get to the fine print on the bottom that says needs digital tuner.
And even so, then even if you had one of these television sets and you were watching a DVD, it wouldn't necessarily look better on that set than in a set that wasn't said to be high definition.
Well, it could look better. Because if you use the component inputs, they have one for each color, or it's not really one for each color. It's a complicated formula of red minus this and yellow plus, et cetera. But there's three jacks in the back that are color-coded. That you get three cables out of the DVD player, three cables into the TV set. And a lot of these TVs can then display this in a progressive scan mode, which is a higher level of resolution than the normal TV, which uses what's called an interlaced scan, where they paint every other line, then go back and paint the missing lines. Progressive paints every line. So, in fact, a DVD probably will look better on one of these sets. It won't be high definition, but it'll be a very impressive picture. So, yes, you can get somewhat better DVD resolution, but it's not high definition.
And then if we could compare that with what a high definition DVD would look like, would we see a big difference between those two pictures?
You'll definitely see a difference. Whether it's a big difference, it's kind of subjective. Mm-hmm. You get almost double the number of lines. Not quite double the number, because the standard high-definition picture is an interlaced picture, whereas DVD can be naturally a progressive picture. So it comes out better, but it's not double the number of lines. It's about a third more lines with a high-definition DVD, basically. And so, but there aren't any out there until we come out with a blue laser, which is now becoming commercially feasible. They have them in Japan. So you can get all that data crammed on that little disc, because you need much tinier, smaller wavelength to fit all that. The tracks must be almost a tenth of what a regular DVD is to get all that extra information on the disc. So you can use the same system. And fortunately, when they do come out with high definition DVD, it will be backward compatible. So it will play your existing DVDs on the same player. There's no trick to doing that, so they can manage that at least. They'll just have a red laser as well as a blue laser, and so that'll be pretty easy.
Our guest this morning here in this part of Focus 580 is Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette and other publications, and every once in a while he's here and we talk about what's new in this area. So if you have questions about these very things, CDs, DVDs, TVs, VCRs, also turntables, amplifiers, speakers, any and all that kind of stuff. Particularly if you're maybe thinking about making a purchase and you want to know, when I go down there and when I look at this stuff, what questions do I ask? What's important to know and what maybe doesn't matter quite as much? He can certainly advise you. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Chicago to start with on our line number 4. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask Rich, is there anything new coming on that we can all be excited about in terms of home entertainment or home broadcasting? I'm late, so I apologize if you already mentioned it.
Well, I've mentioned a couple things that MP3 is now spreading to home players and car players. The theater standard for home theater, Dolby Digital and DTS, have added two more channels now. There are two back channels as well as two side channels, and that gives you a somewhat more realistic audio experience than watching a home movie. It also increases the price considerably. You need two more amplifiers two more speakers. You can do it with one speaker in back, but it's kind of cumbersome. I can't I just can't get real enthused about this constantly adding on, adding on. Pretty soon they're going to have a wall of speakers so totally surrounding you. There'll be 47 channels, and you'll need 47 amplifiers, and it just gets – they're really pushing their luck, I think, with this whole –
Well, you'd have to have a mansion with about 20,000 square feet to put all that stuff in there.
Yes, exactly, and most of us can't afford that.
Yeah.
So as far as exciting things, I mean, if we ever get digital television, HDTV, that'll be very exciting. But there's nothing really that's going to roll your socks up and down on the market right now or coming down the pike other than improvements in what we already have. So
DVD recorder.
Well, there are DVD recorders out there.
Well, personal video recorders, yeah, on the hard drive.
But there are DVD recorders as well. They're very expensive, and they are copy protected, which means they can the person supplying the software, they will not copy commercial DVDs, and they won't copy high-definition TV. If there's a copy restriction code in the broadcast, for example. So if you say you're watching a satellite broadcast of HDTV and wanted to record it on your DVD recorder, you might not be able to. So it's not going to serve a lot of purpose other than recording your camcorder tapes, for example.
When are we going to see the new high-definition DVDs come out of?
I think it's going to be a couple of years yet until they get the price down. And these DVD recorders, by the way, the computer ones are fairly cheap now. They're down to about $800 for a drive in your computer, but the standalone ones are still well over $2,000.
Now, these personal video recorders, what are they, 35 hours, 60 hours, or whatever it is?
And on the way up, you can get up to 60 hours. I think they go up to 100 hours soon because the hard drives keep getting smaller and faster and cheaper and larger. So these huge hard drives are starting in a year or so. We have terabyte hard drives rather than just gigabyte hard drives. And then we're talking hundreds of hours.
You think the day will come when you can get $1,500 on a hard drive or something like that about 20, 30 years down the road? Or
I'll have tried maybe 2 or 3 years down the road. I mean, it's changing so rapidly as far as hard drive capacity.
Are you telling me you'll be able to get 1,500 hours on a hard drive in 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, depending on the video quality you want. It won't probably be the best video quality, but the size of hard drives is increasing so rapidly as the cost comes down that, and every company now, IBM, Seagate, all these have new technologies for magnetic disk recording, for hard drive recording.
Well, it'll probably be like the VCR. Put your VCR on slow long play. You won't get as good a picture, but you'll be able to get more on it.
Right, exactly.
And I suspect that if you want, in this 1,500-hour hard drive, if you want to get a good digital, you have to slow it down to 500 hours.
Right. I mean, and I'm not saying it's going to be 1,500 hours. Maybe it's only going to be 1,000 hours. But all of this is possible technically as the price goes down and the capacity goes up.
You can get 1,000 hours, but if you want a real good quality, you'd have to slow down maybe 300 or 400.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, That's certainly within the realm of possibility.
Well, that would be nice because that would replace the VCR almost.
Yeah, except you can't remove the discs. So if you wanted to go to a friend's house and watch a tape, you couldn't. Also, they're making these players in such a way that they can inhibit whether they can be copied or not.
Yeah, so you have to transfer everything over to videotape anyway.
Right, analog videotape, because digitally they're making them so they will not digitally copy.
So you couldn't transfer it to a DVD or something like that.
Right, if the program producer didn't want it to happen or the network didn't want it to happen, it wouldn't happen, right.
Well, maybe someday they'll get past that. You know, I've always said when they ruined Napster, they just ruined. They got a dozen replacements. They didn't solve the problem. They merely caused it to metastasize.
Well, that's probably true.
Because now you've got some place in Belgium that does it. You've got a place in Israel and a place in Montreal. The recording companies really should have tried to reach an agreement with Napster, but
well, some of them did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but it's just unfortunate that you have people that are so, and I hate to use the word so greedy, that they don't want half the pie. They want the whole pie. I understand they've driven some of the music stations off the internet because of that.
Yeah, but you know, it's a two-way street. I mean, people, composers, performers, are entitled to reap a reward for the fruit of their labors, and record companies do deserve some return on investment for the efforts they've gone to. Now, I'm not saying that they're blameless or that the prices are reasonable. I mean, $17, $18 for a CD is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's not the retailer who's pocketing all that. So there's a lot of greed on all sides, but I don't think the consumer necessarily should get music for free, because somebody had to create that music, somebody had to record that music, somebody had to distribute that music.
Well, didn't Napster offer to charge some of the customers? Didn't they?
Yeah, and they're doing that right now. You can subscribe and pay a fee and get certain things that are paid for, and that's a more reasonable picture. But, I mean, at one point, Sony was going to charge $1 per song to download a song. That's considering that cost them 5 cents, that's a little bit ridiculous.
No one can do that. I mean, no one can pay for that.
Well, you're going to find that the music companies, the record companies, are going to form a cartel just like the OPEC, and they're going to get what they want, and only independent artists will have reasonably priced music.
Well, now, in the baseball thing, I never could figure that out. When you want to hear baseball on the internet, do you have to pay $9.95 a month for one team or for the whole thing?
The whole thing.
Oh, I see. In other words, if you want to watch, if you want to listen to the White Sox or the Cubs, you don't have to. You don't have to pay $9.95 for each team.
No, no. It's
that's what I was
any baseball game for the whole season or what, I the season or the month. I guess it's the month, but
that sounds a little more reasonable. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go on here to southeastern Illinois, line number one. Hello.
Yes, I think I'm probably out of my class here financially to begin with, but I'm just wondering, is there a, something that one can buy that is not in high-definition TV, but would provide a television monitor for the dish network receiver and would also provide a monitor for a computer? I mean, is there something that you can combine television and also would be an input off a tape recorder and you can combine all of that in one, and by buying one thing you can get a larger size for, you know, the money that you have.
Well, they do exist, and actually several companies, I know Toshiba and RCA both came out with them, and they didn't sell well, and I'm not sure they're still available, combination computer monitor TV sets. It's always a compromise because the computer monitor portion will always be inferior to a dedicated computer monitor. The TV set will be as good as you can get for TV, but it won't be high definition necessarily. They weren't selling for that much. Well, they were selling for a fair amount of money. I mean, the $2,000 price range for a large screen. We're talking a big screen model here, like 32 inches. I'm not sure any of them are still available because they weren't hot sellers because of this compromise. Nobody wanted to use a TV set for their computer monitor. And so I suggest it's still better to spend $400 or $500 on a good TV set, which you can get a very nice 27-inch TV set for $400 or $500 these days, and then buy a dedicated computer monitor for $300 or so dollars, where you get a nice 17-inch computer monitor for that price, and you've spent $700.
Well, I was thinking as much in space and you know, convenience of the combining the two in one location as well as money.
Well, Samsung makes a combination LCD computer monitor TV set. It costs about $1,600, but it's only an 18-inch LCD screen.
Yeah. Now, it's not possible then to feed television signal or a dish network signal into a computer monitor.
Yeah, it can be done through your computer. You get a tuner card for your computer. I think Dish Network also has some sort of facility to do that. It is possible. It just can't do it directly. You need a special converter to make it work right, unless you have the right cabling and everything.
You go through the computer?
Generally, yeah.
And do you have any idea of what the picture is like? I mean,
well, it can be very good.
Yeah.
I mean, I've watched DVDs on my computer, and the picture is fantastic if you want to watch them on a 17-inch screen.
Okay, now you can a DVD can be fed into a computer?
Well, it can, but most computers now, you can get DVD drives built into the computer.
Oh, I see.
So it just plays it right from inside the computer.
Okay, and so that you could, if you got a 19-inch monitor, you'd have a 19-inch picture. Yeah, okay.
Right.
I think that, before I get the hook here,
you might check with see if RCA still has their multimedia monitor available. It was on the market about 2 years ago.
You were talking about a digital tape recorder. Is that worthwhile trying to get a digital tape recorder? And also, would that not record a digital signal from Dish?
Well, the problem is there's one out there. JVC makes a digital VHS tape recorder that works with the Dish network. But I don't think at this point, it costs about $700, $800 if it's still available. It may have been taken off the market by now because everything's in flux and tape is on the way out. Nobody's going to be using tape. It's all going to be disc recording in the future, either on a hard drive or on a DVD. So tape is sort of still an interim thing. You're not going to see many digital VHS or digital tape recorders. In fact, even digital audio tape is history now. It's being discontinued.
So it's not. It wouldn't be worthwhile to try to buy a digital tape recorder.
Not unless somebody was selling one for $300 and you get it cheap.
Yeah. Okay, I've got another question. I get Sound and Vision, is that the name of the magazine?
Yep.
On Talking Books now, and in their reviews on DVDs, they talk, and I don't know if I've got the term right because I may not remember it, but they talk about double-layer or triple-layer DVDs.
Right.
What does that mean?
Oh, double layer. Well, it should be invisible to you, is that, or to anybody, there are two layers of data, and the laser refocuses from one to the other. This allows them to double the storage capacity of the disk. They technically can make a two-sided four layers for an enormous amount of storage, but what they do with most movies now is they use a two-layer disk, and you see about a two-second glitch as the laser refocuses after it gets to the end of one layer and goes back to start the other layer. You'll see a little flicker in the picture, or a bit of a glitch. It's a much briefer and less interrupting than when Laserdisc players used to have to stop and go to the other side of the disk with a second laser. But that's what it's not an important factor. All players now play two-sided DVD or two-layer DVDs.
Well, aren't there? I think I recall them saying something about three-layer. Is there a three-layer DVD?
No, there's not.
Yeah, just a two-layer and then a single layer.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that answers the question for a while. Thank you.
All right. Our guest this morning is Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for different publications, including our newspaper here, the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, and is here occasionally on the show. We talk about what's new in consumer electronics, and your questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Champaign is next, line number two.
Yeah, I just broke into your conversation here, coming on 10 after 11. You're just talking about quality of television and broadcast signal. Now, I've just gone to a digital satellite dish and a Sony Vega flat-screen TV, and the increase in grade of clarity in the picture and everything is just, it's fantastic compared to what I had before. And so, but your feeling right now is that there's nothing really new coming after this that's worthwhile for quite a little while?
That's right. I mean, we have high-definition television if anybody wants to buy it. I mean, the sets are available. But as far as local broadcasters are not broadcasting it, cable companies are refusing to carry it at this point. So your only choice is satellite, either DirecTV or the Dish Network. And that's where it's at. I mean, there's no system beyond HDTV that's proposed anytime in the near future. It'd be lucky if they get that off the ground.
Well, and just as an observation, I mean, for me, to go to HDTV really doesn't... I mean, for me, the quantum leap was going just from my old TV to a Sony Vega flat screen with a digital signal coming in. It's fantastic. It's been a huge difference.
Yeah, in fact, they've actually upgraded the satellite systems. RCA and some of the other manufacturers are now offering DirecTV satellite receivers with those component video outputs like DVD players have. Since satellite is digital, they can do this. So if you have a TV with the component video input, which your Vega probably does, you can actually get even better quality from satellite than before. Again, it's sort of DVD quality from satellite. And that's so I think anybody using cable these days, unless they are dying for perfect reception on the local channels, which you can get from the antenna in your attic,
yeah,
in most places in the Champaign or East Central Illinois, I think satellite is the way to go. And also the prices are still about 5% cheaper on satellite than they are buying from cable.
Yeah, oh, I hear you. Yeah, no, that's a great way to go. So in terms of kind of the next step up for me for TV sets, the only way I'm thinking of going is to go to a wall hanging set. When are those going to get to be a price that's, you know, kind of reasonable? You know, a 27-inch TV in that $600-$700 range.
I'm afraid there's going to be a longer wait for that than the terabyte hard drives because it's like the LCD screens. I mean, it's only recently there's been a price drop in LCD screens where you can get a 17-inch LCD screen for under $1,000, which is amazing because 3 years ago they were $3,000.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I run an LCD screen, 17-inch for my computer, and actually you can get them over at Sam's Club in town here for $350 now.
Yeah. Of course, they're not all the same quality, but
that's true.
LCD's been with us now for how long? 12 color LCDs have been common in computers for 12 years, and they're finally coming down in price. These plasma screens, I've been watching the prices. They haven't budged in the 3 years they've been on the market, and they are having manufacturing difficulties with them. It's a technology that maybe someday will succeed, but they're finding new technologies, new kinds of LCDs that are very cheap to manufacture. There's three new LCD technologies. Organic luminescence LCDs and various other kinds of LCDs that theoretically can be made as cheaper than cathode ray tubes, which is your standard picture tube.
Yeah.
And they're estimating 2 to 3 years on manufacturing of these units. They've tested them. They work. Pioneer's got a whole bunch of patents on this new organic electroluminescent design. And those may actually surpass the plasma displays because plasma is just a very difficult technology to work with and very fragile. And, yeah, I'd love to have one of those on my wall. It's wonderful to have a 3-inch thick TV that hangs on the wall. Of course, what they don't tell you about those is that the electronics are all in a box you have to put somewhere else. The electronics are not in the display.
Run a cable up to them, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that's fine. No, it sounds like to me, with my digital satellite dish and my Sony Vega flat screen, I'm as good as I need to be for the next 15 years, and I can buy something really new and exciting when it comes out then.
Well, I say you're as good as you need to be, or at least for the next 5 or 6 years. So,
I'm cheap, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the call. Let's go to Urbana for somebody else right here. Line 3. Hello.
Hello. I have a question about Mitsubishi VCR. Is that appropriate to ask questions
about
that? Sure. And I couldn't play tapes on it anymore because I got lots of white fuzzy lines and jagged lines and flipping pictures. And so I was told that it's the head. Does that sound right?
It could be, yeah.
That's the head, and that could be replaced with a new one. Does that sound appropriate to you?
Yeah, but to tell you the truth, by the time you replace the head, which is a very expensive proposition in a VCR, you can just about go out and buy a new VCR that'll give you better performance for about the same amount of money.
Well, I did that. I went and bought a Sony VCR and brought it home, and I spent a whole day reading the directions and trying to figure out how to work the whole thing, and it was so complicated, I took it back.
Well, there are other brands on the market that are less complicated or easier to use. I think Panasonic has a really neat remote control with most of theirs that is very easy to use to set your VCR. And not all of them may be as complicated as the Sony, but they're all, you know, Panasonic, Toshiba. There's a number of good brands out there.
Okay, let me write that down. Panasonic?
You start with Panasonic because they have the best remote control as far as ease of use. And they have this little thumb wheel on it that at least they used to. I think the new one may not have that.
What does that do?
Well, you can just set everything with that one little thumb wheel. At least that's what they used to have, called Program Director. I'm not sure they still include that, but they generally have the better remote controls of the ones I've seen and the easier programming. And the newer VCRs set the time automatically. You set them to channel 12, which broadcasts a time signal, an invisible time signal, and the VCR sets its own time. And they adjust for daylight saving automatically. So a lot of these things that you used to do manually, you don't have to worry about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the VCRs you can subscribe to a free program service. If they have one of those electronic program guides, and I think most of them do now, as a matter of fact, you could simply put the display on your TV screen of the programming and then click on the program you want to record, and it automatically sets the recorder. So, you know, if you look for one of those, I think it's called TV Guide Plus now or whatever the new name for it is, that really makes setting things easy. So go to a store that can give you a little personal attention and tell them that you want something that's really easy to program and see what they come up with.
Well, I did go to Good Vibes. That's where I got the one I got. So I didn't know where else to go.
Well, they're one of the few large independent dealers left in town, and I'm not sure.
They had Sony, Mitsubishi, and one other one. I forget what the other one was. But all the others were very, I think, you know, a higher class, like DVDs or something. I don't know what they were.
Well, try finding an inexpensive Panasonic machine and see if that doesn't work. Or I know the RCA machines on them have the built-in program guide. So
which one?
Some of the RCA machines have the built-in program guide.
The RCA,
yeah.
Okay. So you don't think, to put in a new head is what? You don't think
it's really worth it at this point.
You don't think it's what?
I don't think it's worth it to you to do that.
Will it work if I do that?
It will. Well, if the service technician thinks that is the problem, it could be a simpler problem for all you know. But I leave it up to the service technician.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Sure.
All right. Very good. Well, we have certainly time for other calls. If people have questions about consumer electronics, this is the Data Call-In. Rich Warren is our guest. He writes about things like VCRs and DVDs and televisions for the News Gazette, other publications, and he's here occasionally, and we just talk about what's new.
I want to say a little anecdote here that's really troubling me. I have about 4 turntables at home, and I only really need one of them. So I decided I would sell or donate my Bang & Olufsen 8002, one of the most beautiful turntables ever built. And it's also one of the best products Bang & Olufsen ever made. It has a linear tracking tone arm. It was really one of the most flawless turntables of that sort ever marketed. And Unfortunately, one of the chips inside that controls it, it's all electronically controlled, went bad. And so now it spins at 108 RPM and the arm doesn't go out. So I figured, well, replace the one chip, probably cost $100. You'd have this great turntable, which originally sold for $600 10 years ago and now probably would sell, you know, for a lot more. So I started thinking, well, maybe I'll just give it to a hi-fi deal and let them sell it used, you know, let them repair it and take, I don't want the money for it. I called a friend of mine who was a Bang & Olufsen dealer at one time. They said, Bang & Olufsen now has decided it's not going to make phonograph cartridges or styli for their turntables any longer. So even if you fix this turntable, if somebody broke or damaged the stylus, you'd have to throw it away because it only takes their stylus, their cartridge. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a terrible, you know, this thing is beautiful. Mechanically, it's perfect. And yet now I'm going to have to actually put it in a landfill because there's no way to make it do what it's supposed to. Even if you have a vast record collection and want to play records, they have made it impossible for this machine to work, you know, even if you repair it, which they will repair it for you. But then if you break the needle, so to speak, you're out of luck. And that, to me, at least with, you know, conventional tone arms, you have a choice. Shure Brothers still makes all the replacement styli for their cartridges. So if you have a Shure cartridge and it breaks, you can get it fixed. You can replace the stylus. Mm-hmm. But this Bang & Olufsen only takes the B&O cartridge, which was an excellent cartridge in its day. But now they're not going to support it anymore.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I happen to have a Bang & Olufsen turntable myself.
Good luck, David. You want mine to cannibalize parts from?
we may have to talk about that later. I don't know. Well, in any case, we have some other callers. We go on and go to Urbana for someone here, line number one. Hello.
Yes, Rich, enjoy your midnight special show. I've got a question here. What is the leading professional radio journalist's audio recorder that's being used out now? Is it the Marantz mini disc, or I think there's another one, an HTB or something like that? What are the guys and gals using out there in the field?
Most of them are now using laptop PCs with cards that convert them into audio recorders, basically. And then they also have CD burners built into the PC, a multiple bay PC, the laptop, and they're using those. That's the newest thing. And, in fact, radio stations are moving away from mini discs, except for use as cart machines, to do spot announcements and pre-recorded breaks. And everything is going to hard drive, and then everything is being burned on the CD. I know my station has just bought another $25,000 automated CD burner to go with the two it already has. And we have about, I'd say, six PCs with enormous hard drives that all the programs are recorded onto. So everything is going that direction. As far as portable recorders, I really don't know. DAT recorders are being discontinued because the company that made the transports, Alps, is no longer going to make them. Uh-huh. It's not Alpine, it's Alps, which actually owns part of Alpine. So the way to go is simply to get a good laptop computer with a large hard drive, a fast large hard drive, and then buy the little sound card, the card that goes in the PC slot there, which is your digital analog to digital converter. Uh-huh. And then either an outboard CD recorder or get a machine that comes with a CDR drive built in, which many of them do now for hardly any extra. And that's how most of the recording is done. I think about a year from now, I'm going to switch over from using the right now, I take a console CD recorder, a Marantz CD recorder, out to recordings with me, and uh-huh. It weighs a lot, and it's big. And it's a standalone CDR recorder, professional one, so it doesn't have the copy protection. It will use the computer discs. That's the other trick. If you take a consumer model, it puts that copy protection on and also will only use audio discs, which are more expensive.
Uh-huh.
So that's where radio is going these days.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, let's go on to another Urbana person. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering, you were talking earlier about HDTV. One of the things I'm kind of confused about is the aspect ratio and whether a 16:9 aspect ratio TV is generally an HDTV or not. I watch a lot of DVDs in the widescreen format, and it's kind of irritating to see them in a letterbox style. Is there anything short of an HDTV in the 16:9 format?
Oh, quite a few. Toshiba makes a whole series of TVs called, I think they call them Theater View, which are widescreen TVs that are not HD. They're good TVs. And several companies, like what I was saying, is that, for example, Panasonic has this gorgeous projection TV on the market for $1,900 that has the widescreen, but it doesn't have the digital decoder. So it's an ideal unit for playing DVDs on a widescreen TV. There are more widescreen models coming out because they're acknowledging finally that most DVDs are widescreen, and that's the way to view them. So there are plenty of opportunities, good sets coming out that aren't true HD sets but do have the widescreen.
I see. Okay. And are there, conversely, some people claim to be having HDTV-ready TVs, except they're still in the 4:3 aspect ratio?
Yeah, and that doesn't make any sense to me.
Nor to me. Okay. I was just wondering.
Now, there is no law that HD programming has to be 16 by 9. It only has – the law only the standard only includes the resolution. They can do a standard 4:3, but generally most HD programming will be 16 by 9. It just doesn't have to be 16 by 9.
Okay, so all of this stuff is pretty much in flux then right now. But
unfortunately,
there is some interim one might do if watching a lot of DVDs is to go to a 16 by 9 more ordinary resolution TV.
Yeah, and that way, even when HD TV becomes a standard, you can buy the decoder box and display it on your existing 16 by 9 TV in the 16 by 9 format at least, even though it's not going to be the same resolution as high definition. So you'll get that bonus of at least seeing it in the right aspect ratio.
And perhaps seeing a little bit more of the picture. So
yeah.
The 16 by 9 does include actually more pixels, if you will, in the computer sense, I assume. Is that right?
That's one of those things that's kind of a gray area because it depends how the DVD is encoded. Some of the DVDs, if they're anamorphic, yes, you actually see more pixels. You see more picture. If they're simply letterboxed, it's not more picture. But it gets kind of complicated to explain that.
Okay. Well, maybe that's beyond the scope of a show like this. And, okay. Well, thanks very much.
Okay,
for
thanks. Well, if you have a television set that has a rectangular screen so that then you can watch widescreen DVDs, if you were then watching a conventional television program, what does it look like? Stripes on the side?
Oh, yep.
Okay. So it'll be square just like it is now, and there'll be blank spaces.
Well, all the TVs contain a feature that will expand the picture, but it does that by either cropping the top and bottom, which you don't really want, or it distorts the picture by subtly expanding it. So some of the people are fatter than they should be, but there's no ideal way to correct for that. So, yeah, it's going to be, if you want it in the actual original state, it's going to be back to 4:3.
Okay. Next, line number 3. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
To kind of continue what you were talking about with the last caller, most movies are really recorded. Their aspect ratio is much wider than 16 by 9. And often you'll see on the CD a claim that it has a 16 by 9 enhanced format. On the DVD, on the recording itself. And I have never yet figured out quite what that's about.
Usually when they say enhanced, that means they're using the anamorphic process to actually give you more picture. That is not just letterboxing. That is actually the original aspect ratio fully contained. And it gets kind of complicated.
Talking about the anamorphic recordings.
Well, but usually enhanced is a easier to understand word than try to put anamorphic on the box. It depends on the company and how the terminology is very vague, and sometimes you never know. I know people at Sound and Vision who are always trying to figure out how is this movie encoded, because it's a matter of the encoding process and how they do it. And you're right about 16 by 9 was taken as an arbitrary figure of trying to average out between movies that were widescreen in the 50s, which were closer to 16 by 9, to the ones today. And yes, you can watch many movies today and you will see it letterboxed still, even on a widescreen TV, because they're a wider screen than the TV. Now, some TVs have circuitry to cope with that, and a lot of things can be done digitally, electronically, to compensate, to make it seem like they're all 16 by 9. But you're right, they're not. Some of them are considerably wider screen than even 16 by 9.
I've got all of the stuff from the Best Progressive Scan component TV and DVD player, and I've just never seen there's that claim on the DVD, the pre-recorded DVD, but I've never seen any settings anywhere on any of the equipment that refers to it, and it's like, well, what is it? The other question I've got is, what, if anything, has happened to MPEG-4 decoding or encoding?
Well, I think that's coming along. It's right now, it's sort of, I think, more ideal for video on computers where the compression is really critical to get the files smaller to make video possible over the internet. Obviously, it will have its place in home theater at some point. But right now, MPEG 2 is working so well for DVD, they don't want to mess. That's one standard you don't want to mess with because you can't just make it, the current players wouldn't be able to decode it.
All right.
So that's an area they don't want to make their players obsolete in that respect quite at this point.
Well, my impression is that it was supposed to not only increase the compression, but actually increase the quality as well.
Oh, yeah, because the existing MPEG system is a decade old, and there are much more effective algorithms now than there were a decade ago.
Okay,
they
so
know
I
the math
right
better.
About that, but it will improve compression and will improve quality at the same time.
I mean, I'm sure they will find a compatible way, like most existing players will play MPEG 1, even though nothing's encoded in MPEG 1.
Mm-hmm.
They will be able to make it backward compatible. It's just that the existing players won't be able to play anything in the future. And
I'm sure they'll bring it out one notch at a time, so that like they do with the DSS receivers. They keep adding one more little feature, and that's all you can get until 6 months later when they offer another little added feature, so you have to keep buying the damn things.
That's the industry for you. That's how they make their profits.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Line one is next. Champagne. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Rich, we are remodeling our kitchen, and we want to be able to accommodate a TV in there. I haven't gone out and looked yet. I thought I saw an ad recently in the paper that had a small LCD TV that flipped down. Are such things out there, or is there any other way to have a TV projection in a room like a kitchen without taking up all the space of, say, a typical 13-inch TV?
There are some LCD TVs coming out. I'm not familiar with the total lineup. Some companies have started to introduce them because the price of the display has finally come down, because before that, LCD was so expensive when you could buy a 13-inch cathode ray tube TV for $200 and the LCD model was $1,200. It didn't make a lot of sense. They weren't going to sell many. But now that the price is coming down to maybe $400 for an LCD TV, some of the companies are looking at that again. There's no projection system. I mean, the shallowest projection TVs are about 16 to 18 inches. But I think you'll start seeing more of these flat panel TVs for like use in the kitchen, et cetera. You will pay a big premium compared to the cathode ray tube TV. But, of course, the beauty of the thin screen would be remarkable. But I don't know any specific models this time. Probably, I would guess, next January is Consumer Electronics, so they're going to start unveiling a lot of these sets.
Okay.
January?
Yeah, I would say in January you're going to see quite a few more appear on the market. I know that I saw one, Proton had one at last CES. That was a combination TV, computer monitor type screen that was very impressive.
Uh-huh.
LCD. But I haven't seen many others at this point.
All right. And nothing else occurs to you that I should check into?
Not really. And unfortunately, those little sets have big, long, deep cathode ray tubes. So they're,
yeah.
I know your problem. They don't fit on the counter very well.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask about DVD recorders. Are they going to be, I think I asked this question maybe of the same gentleman a couple years ago. He said they were in the pipeline. Are they coming out with DVD recorders?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of them on the market. Panasonic has one that's DVD RAM, and Pioneer has one that's DVD-RW, and Sony is promising one in a few months that's going to be DVD plus RW.
Are they going to be accessible now? My interest is to put digital images on them. Are we going to be able to take and do what we do with sound recorders with the digital picture?
Anything that you record yourself, that is camcorder or digital camera images, they will store. However, they won't copy commercially produced software. That is, they won't copy DVDs, for example.
Will they have, I've got one of the double decks now for the music. They'll have double decks of that you can copy your own stuff? Is that something that they'll, dual decks, I guess it'd be called?
I bet they will, but I bet it won't be for another year or two. The ones now are already $2,000 to $3,000 in price.
Oh, I see. So it's still still up there. Yeah.
Yeah, but they are starting to come down. You're going to start seeing some for $1,000. Just the same progression as CDR. I mean, the first CDR machines were $7,000, and then they were $5,000, and they were $2,000, and now you can buy one for $199.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, that will come down. And the trouble is there's three competing systems. That's where the bottleneck is. If they'd all agree on a single system, this all could be solved. They'd be cheaper. They'd be common. But everybody's competing with their own system. There's no real standard.
I see. So that just takes a while for them to bang heads.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, I think it'll be another 6 months to a year. I think there's peace made between the DVD-RW camp and the CDD-plus-RW camp that at least one of those players will play all the systems. They're working on it. There was an agreement that they'd probably get a compromise.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, and we'll try to get one more. Bloomington, Illinois here, line four. Hello.
Yes, I have a question. What is your opinion of satellite internet for areas that cannot get DSL for a while?
Everything I've read about it has been positive. The only problem is that you face the same problem you face with satellite TV. If you have an extremely thick cloud cover or a snowstorm, you can lose your signal for periods of time. So it's not always guaranteed that it's also very expensive. They're costing $60 to $70 a month compared with DSL, which is $40 to $50 a month, depending on your provider. But I've heard all the reports have been that it's extremely fast. The quality is good. It's not as fast as the best possible cable modem, for example, if you have nobody else on your cable. But it's much, much faster than existing phone lines or ISDN. So it's a very good compromise for somebody who's out in the country and can't get access to high-speed broadband phone lines. It's the only thing you really got, and it does work.
How often would you assume that would happen where you would be down with cloud cover?
I would guess, Ed Keyser probably could answer that better than I could, but I would guess that the storms are bad enough maybe once every 10 days, once every 2 weeks, you'd get a storm of intensity enough to block the signal. They're getting pretty good at punching through the clouds. Their satellites are pretty high power these days. So, you know, you may be down a couple of times a month, perhaps, in the worst possible storms. And also remember, you're probably not going to be online at 3 in the morning if the storm rolls through then. You know, you're not going to be using it. So the actual time you'll be interrupted or, you know, annoyed by it probably would be once a month, I would guess. I can't say because I don't know the weather patterns and how thick the clouds are at any given time, but that's what I would guess.
Okay. Is there anything that you would think I should look for or look out for in selecting one of these?
Well, unfortunately, most of them insist you take their internet service provider, which I find a little bit troublesome. But generally, you just have to compare what their speeds are and what their prices are and what restrictions there's. Like, DirecTV has like three different systems. One's hooked up with AOL, so if you're an AOL person, you can just merge right into that one and keep your set standard AOL. Then Dish Network has a couple that are buying time. One's called Pegasus. There's a lot of options.
And I'm gonna have to jump in here, but we've used our time, and we're gonna have to go. With a promise, I'm sure on another day, Rich, we'll come back and we'll do this again. And in the meantime, by the way, you might check out a little show he does called The Midnight Special on WYLL FM Friday nights at 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. I provide the coffee.
That's right, Rich Warren, ladies and gentlemen. You can also see his columns in the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette.